Hello and welcome to today's Heart Lift with Janelle. I'm Janelle. So happy to have you here for part three of my conversation with Paige Allen, author of He Knows Your Name. Paige and I have proffered some big questions and some prompts here about being a daughter of God. Our conversation ignited curiosity inside of me, so I went to Strong's Concordance, and I just wanted to know in Luke 8, when Jesus does call this woman daughter, what that meant. And of course, it means a daughter of God, as we know, but it also had another indication of being acceptable to God, rejoicing in God's peculiar care and protection. And I thought, that's really the deepest part of that identity to me. Having not had a really strong father-daughter relationship myself, I've had to do a lot of work in that area in my life, and maybe that's why it's igniting this incredible curiosity to really, how can I now walk the rest of my life really possessing and understanding that I am acceptable, first and foremost, to God my Father, that He loves me, He rejoices over me, and then I can rejoice in His peculiar care and protection over me. He is my Father. So Heartlifter, make yourself comfortable, grab a cup of something delicious, your notebook, a pen, and just take some time to allow all of this beautiful conversation with Paige to soak over you. Welcome Paige back.
Or, and if nobody sees it, is that enough? And this is going to fall differently.
There will be some of us that are in the shadows that God needs to nudge out, or they need some encouragement to move out in their life. There will be those of us who are more public, and God is going to say, I need you to come away with me for a while and rest.
Or a woman who's going to be groveling and needs to touch the hem. There are going to be those who are in the shadows that are going to need to be called, and that's what I love to do. I love to call women to come into the fruition of their gifts. But in this season, I just think God is really wanting all of us to get very, very secure in invisibility.
Yes, I think that's the perfect way to say it.
Okay.
Secure in invisibility. Yeah. Knowing He sees.
He does.
He may be the only one, but He sees.
Yes. And He knows, and He values it. And He has given you, we do a lot of naming and owning in this community, like name what you're feeling, name. But here we're just going to name, we are daughter, and we're going to sit in security that we are known and loved, that we belong. And that's going to be enough.
Yes.
And perhaps, just perhaps,
the affect, A-F-F-E-C-T, and the outcome of that is going to be a surge, a surge of power and a surge of joy. Because when every one of us, you are a pastor, when women gather, I say this is my heartbeat, when we gather in a spirit of unity, an indomitable spirit of unity, watch out.
Yes.
Watch out.
Yes.
I don't want to be Paige, and Paige doesn't want to be me, and I'm not, I'm invisible. Nobody sees what I do. We don't have the pity. We don't have all those names that Satan wants to hold us back with. We're going to see something happen, and it's needed right now.
Yes, absolutely.
Would you agree? You stand on a stage and you look out and you hear women. If a church, if women within the church, if you're women, which you're doing, I know you are, you're bringing a sense of spiritual unity.
Yes.
We can do that corporately, but it starts by us waking up as an individual in our bed, opening our eyes and going, okay, I matter.
Exactly.
Okay.
I matter. He sees me. He values me. And I have purpose. But I do not have to define my purpose.
No.
According to
a standard, a system.
No.
I matter. Period.
Yes.
God sees me. Me and God, we got this. I'm going to go out my door today. I'm getting ready to do that myself later. And I'm going to be used of God. I'm going to be a blessing. I'm going to be a heart lifter. I'm going to be radically loving everyone that I meet. I just think that's the premise and the purpose of why you wrote. He knows my name, the subtitle, mm-hmm. How Seven Nameless Women of the Bible Reveal Christ's Love for You. I don't want to stop.
You're so great. Oh, I've enjoyed this so much. It's been a great conversation.
I think it's been a really super precious conversation. Mm-hmm. Thank you for holding on to this book, to this dream, to this work, and allowing God to use you.
Oh, thank you. It's been so much fun. when it all began to unfold.
Yeah.
And only the way he could. I just was like, okay.
Oh, okay.
Let's see what you were doing. Maybe a little bit.
So, maybe a little bit. Well, we just want to know and be secure. We want mm-hmm. to know. Everyone listening, he knows your name.
Yeah.
Okay. Remember the challenge. Remember the prompt.
Okay.
Is that 6 words, 1 to 6 words.
That describe who you are in your essence today.
Yes. Yes.
And we will check in with you when this finally releases. So thank you, Paige, from the bottom of my heart. And this community thanks you.
Thank you.
Heartlifters, I hope these conversations with Paige Allen have been as beneficial for you as they have been for me, as I can't quit thinking about that identity of being daughter and what it really means to me. And I really can't stop thinking about this idea of being secure in invisibility. So it challenged me so much. I went back to this classic book that I've kept on my bookshelf since 2005. It's written by Nicole Johnson. It's a tiny, tiny little book, and it's called The Invisible Woman. She dedicates the book to her sister Vanessa, the most beautiful invisible woman I've ever been able to see. And in the very beginning of the book, where she has you write your name and the date you got the book, it says, "With admiration for the greatness of what you are building, when only God sees." This book came onto my path at a time when I was really, really having some personal struggles with this whole idea of invisibility. And so I thought I would bring it back out. I have read from it before on previous episodes. I don't remember which ones, but I know that I have. And I'm going to read from the beginning. Chapter 1. Now you see me, now you don't. It started to happen gradually. I would walk into a room and no one would notice. I would say something to my family like, "Turn the TV down, please." And nothing would happen. Nobody would get up or even make a move for the remote. I would stand there for a minute, and then I would say again a little louder, "Would someone turn the TV down?" Nothing. Finally, in frustration, I would go over and turn it down myself. One day I was walking my son Jake to school. I was holding his hand, and we were about to cross the street when the crossing guard said to him, "Who is that with you, young fella?" "Nobody," he shrugged. "Nobody?" The crossing guard and I laughed. My son is only 5. But as we crossed the street, I thought, "Oh my goodness, nobody?" Then I began to notice these kinds of things more and more, because it wasn't only with the kids. I was in the grocery store looking for Fruity Pebbles. A clerk from the store walked by and said, "Excuse me, but could you?" And he was gone. He walked right past me to help a woman further down the aisle who was having trouble finding extra fine sugar. She looked about 22 and just so happened to be extra fine herself. I was left on my own with the cereal hunt. Another night, my husband and I went to a party. We'd been there for about 3 hours, and I was ready to leave. I noticed he was talking to a friend from work. So I walked over, and when there was a break in the conversation, I whispered, "I'm ready to go when you are." He just kept right on talking, and he didn't even turn toward me or notice that anyone was standing there. That's when I started to put all the pieces together. I don't think he can see me. I don't think anyone can see me. I'm invisible. It all began to make sense. The blank stares, the lack of response, the way someone will walk into the room while I'm on the phone and ask to be taken to the store. Inside, I'm thinking, can't you see I'm on the phone? Obviously not. No one can see me if I'm on the phone or cooking or sweeping the floor or even resting, because no one can see me at all. I could stand on my head in the corner, and inevitably someone would wonder out loud, is my soccer jersey clean? I'm invisible. When I put dinner on the table, everyone acts like it just appeared from nowhere. The four of us can sit down with a full meal in front of us, and Jake will say, I didn't want milk. As if he's talking to the air. It's the same air that my husband talks to when he surveys the table laden with food and says, there is no butter. I have come to understand that this means I can't see you, I'm not even addressing you, but when I say there is no butter, the butter lady will get up and get it. And he's right. Presto, the butter appears like magic. The milk gets swapped for juice and we go on with dinner. No one says thank you because no one sees that anyone did anything. My family has no clue how their socks get back in their drawers, how their favorite treats end up in that mysterious brown bag that sits by the door waiting to be picked up on their way out, who comes to pick them up after school, or why the dog doesn't wet on the rug anymore. Tim, my teenager, takes everyone else's advice but mine. My husband Michael talks to other people like he's interested in the minute details of their lives, yet he doesn't even ask me about my day. My kindergartner wants to play, but my body is just a mountain to roll over with his trucks. I'm nobody. In a crowded room, no one looks me in the eyes. In the grocery store, I'm just a mother in sweats like every other mother looking for the on sale, now sold out, Fruity Pebbles. Then one day, I decided I need to talk to somebody. I decided on lunch with Janice. She's one of my closest friends and a woman that I would hate if I were immature. She's classically beautiful, wears a size 4, and is smart enough to have started her own million-dollar company. She's definitely the kind of woman other women make up reasons not to like, but she's genuinely good to the core. Not that she is without problems, but she has a great perspective on life, and she has the maturity to keep private things private. She was about to take a 2-week vacation to Europe, but we squeezed in lunch the day before she left. From iced tea and bread through the last bite of chocolate torte, we talked nonstop. Toward the end of the meal, I brought up this issue of invisibility, and then I poured my heart out. I realized that although I was only beginning to say it out loud, I had been feeling it for a long time. The feelings came gushing out like water from a broken pipe. What had been an unconscious struggle for self-definition had finally become conscious. I knew Janice would understand, even if she couldn't relate to my particular situation. I didn't think she would see me as spoiled or self-centered, but I was hoping she would tell me if she did. Instead, she told me that I was putting into words the feelings we've all felt so many times. I was describing the sadness we all feel in the deepest parts of our hearts, she explained. The isolation, the alienation, the aloneness. Then she said, you are asking a question that only you can answer for yourself. The question is, do I matter? Do I matter? No one can answer for you. Your kids cannot give you meaning. Your husband cannot make your life count. Only you, and you alone, can find where the meaning comes from. No one else can do it for you. It's a deep question that has to be settled in the core of who you are, not by what is going on around you. You have doubts about yourself, so you think that everyone else must have doubts about you too. Well, I should have offered to write Janice a check for 2 hours of therapy, but I bought her lunch instead. Driving home, so many questions rattled around in my head. Is this fear of invisibility really all about some kind of confusion with my identity as a woman? Does every woman wonder, am I really doing the right thing? Am I spending my life well? Does this come from complex changes in our culture? Or has it been this way since that dumb apple? I really don't know. It is both irresistible and dangerous to think that other women have it better than I do, that their husbands care more than mine, maybe even help them pick out their shoes. When I see a woman in the grocery store, I can write her life in my head and start to believe it. If her husband is walking around the grocery store with her, I immediately write him to be a caring and sensitive man. I'll help you in every way I can, kind of man. Then I think about my husband, who is at home watching television, and I write my own life as the underappreciated grocery buyer, coupons in hand, wandering up and down the aisles trying to save a few cents that no one cares about but me. Later, I become the family accountant, up late at night with my calculator for company, tracking all the money I've saved, writing checks for bills, trying to balance our budget. I feel like Bob Cratchit in Dickens' Christmas Carol, crouched over his ledgers in the lonely corner of a candle-lit room. I spiral right down at the speed of light into a bottomless chasm of self-pity. The story of my life ends tragically with my dying alone and unloved. Oh, please. Okay. I know it's not true, but that's the way it feels sometimes. The conflict with invisibility is comic and tragic. I can laugh and cry at almost the very same time. It's funny and silly on some days when it's so obvious that you just have to laugh. But it is also terrible. And on those days when I feel stuck in this strange little aspect of the human condition with no plan of escape, it seems there's plenty of medication to help me not feel it. And nothing strong enough to cure it. But sometimes, like after that great lunch with Janice, I feel better. It's just good to be heard, to be able to articulate my feelings and to laugh and cry about the tension. Besides, deep inside, I know that Janice is right. I know that I'm going to have to answer for myself that deep question, do I matter? Heartlifter, whew, that's a tough question, isn't it? Do I matter? And on any given day, we might answer that question differently. I understand that, depending on where we are, our mood swings, or what's happening in our world, or what's going on with our children. A myriad of things can affect the way we answer that question. And so as we would say, God has it, I'm reading another profound book that's been on my shelf for a very long time, just like The Invisible Woman. When the Body Says No, Exploring the Stress-Disease Connection by Canadian physician Dr. Gabor Mate. And just yesterday morning, I read and reread and underlined and highlighted Chapter 17's information on the biology of belief. And it really all boils down our belief system. And under our belief system is going to be our capacity of perception, which is what we have really been talking about here this season. Because perception is everything. It really is. How we perceive someone's comments or their nonverbal cues. It's just so critical. And I think that's why this particular conversation with Paige Allen and understanding that our deepest identity is truly daughter. If I'm a follower of Jesus and I'm a child of God, then I am his daughter, and that has with it a certain profound inheritance. And so I ask myself over and over again as I've been listening to Paige, do I act like a daughter of God? Do I wake up feeling like a daughter of God? Well, no, I don't. And so that's why this is so important to me. So when I pulled this book out again and I saw the biology of belief, I thought, well, why don't I? Why don't I believe that? What is wrong with my capacity to really, really understand? And he writes in the beginning, genes are merely codes. This is G-E-N-E-S. They act as a set of rules and as a biological template for the synthesis of the proteins that give each particular cell its characteristic structure and functions. They are, as it were, alive and dynamic architectural and mechanical plans. Whether the plan becomes realized depends on far more than the gene itself. Genes exist and function in the context of being a living organism. Okay, lean in here. This is getting really neuroscience-y, but it's powerful. The activities of cells are defined not simply by the genes in their nuclei, but by the requirements of the entire organism and by the interaction of that organism with the environment in which it must survive. Okay, here is where I had my aha. Genes are turned on or off by the environment. Genes are turned on or off by the environment. For this reason, the greatest influences on human development, health, and behavior are those of the nurturing environment. Oh my goodness. Hardly anyone who raises plants or animals would ever dispute the primary role of early care in shaping how genetic endowment and potential will unfold. For reasons that have little to do with science, many people have difficulty grasping the same concept when it comes to the development of human beings. Just think about that. This paralysis of thought is all the more ironic, since of all animal species, it is the human whose long-term functioning, okay, so that's super important. Our long-term functioning is most profoundly regulated by the early environment. The milieu of the human organism is the physical and psycho-emotional environment that shapes our development and affects our interactions with the world through our lifetime. And then Dr. Mate speaks of a Dr. Bruce Lipton's work with these things in our body called perception proteins. On the cellular level, I know. They act as the switches, like on, off, that integrate the function of the cell with its environment. So Dr. Bruce Lipton writes, please just stick with me here. I'm getting to a point. Although perception proteins are manufactured through molecular genetic mechanisms, activation of the perception process is controlled or initiated by environmental signals. The controlling influence of the environment is underscored in recent studies on stem cells. Stem cells do not control their own fate. The differentiation of stem cells is based upon the environment the cell finds itself in. For example, three different tissue culture environments can be created. If a stem cell is placed in culture number one, it may become a bone cell. If the same stem cell was put into culture two, it will become a nerve cell. Or if placed into culture dish number three, the cell matures as a liver cell. The cell's fate is controlled by its interaction with the environment and not by a self-contained genetic program. I wrote, holy wow. A key point in Dr. Lipton's astute explanation of biological activity is that at any one time, cells, like the entire human organism, can be either in defensive mode or growth mode, but not both. Okay, this is the most important, and I'm going to close here. Our perceptions of the environment are stored in cellular memory. I knew it. I just knew it. When I read this, I'm like, I knew it. I knew it. When early environmental influences are chronically stressful, the developing nervous system and the other organs of the PNI supersystem repeatedly receive the electric, hormonal, and chemical message that the world is unsafe or even hostile. Those perceptions are programmed in our cells on the molecular level. I'm going to read that one more time. Those perceptions are programmed in our cells on the molecular level, meaning that when early environmental influences are chronically stressful, our developing nervous system, like from the womb on in our lives, I add, and the other organs of the psychoneuroimmunological, that's called our PNI supersystem. So that just means our psycho, which is our mental and emotional health, relational health, neuro, that's the development of our brain, and then immunological, that is our immune system. So this PNI supersystem, right, is what's going to prepare our bodies for living a really, really great life. And so if and when we experience perhaps a chronically stressful early environment, then that's going to send our PNI supersystem repeatedly the messages via electric, hormonal, and chemical that the world is unsafe or even hostile. And those perceptions then are programmed. You know, we talk about this here all the time. Wired. They are rooted and rutted in our neural pathways. And now we are knowing down to the deepest level of our being, which is our cellular level, the molecular level. Early experiences condition the body's stance toward the world. This is just what has been taking my breath away and helping me understand my own plight, my own when the body says no. And hence I'm reading the book again, because early experiences, right? Experiences that you and I had absolutely no control over. We had no personal agency over. They condition our body's stance toward the world and determine our unconscious beliefs about him or herself in relationship to the world. Dr. Lipton calls that process the biology of belief. Now here's the great, great news. Fortunately, human experience and the ever unfolding potential of human beings ensure that the biology of belief, though deeply physiologically ingrained, is not irreversible. Friends, heartlifters, we can change this. That's what I wrote in my book. We can change this. So you might be listening going, do I matter? Why do I feel invisible? That might have been something that was out of your control. Maybe your early childhood experience was filled with chronic stress, trauma, little t, middle t, big t. But I'm leaving you with this today, that today's a new day. You have personal agency, and you have the capacity and the potential for change. So please meet me over on Substack. I hate to leave you here, I know. But meet me on Substack at Heartlift Central and over on Instagram for all the connections. And if you haven't as yet subscribed, to my newsletter where you receive the podcast information. It's letting you know when it's out. Then please do that. All that information is available at JanelleRiordan.com.